My next guest on West Coast Live is a writer. She has a collection of short stories that she's, after a decade of working on them in very fine ways, has produced a really marvelous collection called Quiet As They Come. And it's the story of Vietnamese immigrants and their adventures in the new land, most often in San Francisco. Please welcome Angie Chow to West Coast Live. How do you do? Nice to meet you. Have a seat over there. Thank you. You yourself born in Vietnam?
I was born in Saigon.
And how did you get to this country?
My family and I escaped by boat and then ended up in a refugee camp in Malaysia. And after about 6 months there, we were sponsored by my mom's brother to arrive in San Francisco. And the story collection starts as this framework of three extended families who all end up under one roof in one house with a family in each bedroom in the sunset in San Francisco. Mm-hmm.
And how old were you at the time when you made this journey?
I was 4.
Do you remember much about it?
Yeah, I do. I remember bits and pieces.
What are some of the really salient images you have from that trip?
Oh, gosh. I remember vaguely, and my mom always tells a story because she laughs about it, that at one point when we were in the journey by boat, people are running out of food, and people are eating white rice and the little bits of dried shrimp, you know, those tiny little bits of dried shrimp that you might get on your noodle soup. And these older teenage boys, because each family had their little portion, said, "You're so ugly. We're going to give you ours. Go away." And it was their way of sort of nurturing me, even though they're just teenagers.
I didn't think the story was going to go that way. I thought they were going to take your shrimp or something. But they gave you two. That was a very nice story. But not every story in your book is so pleasant. I mean, ultimately it's a story of human relationships given the context of this immigration. And there's, you know, there's support, there's love, there's beatings, there's a death. I mean, there's conflict with white neighbors.
Right. Yeah. I hope there's a combination of, you know, hijinks and humor as well as, you know, this bittersweet stories of immigration. I think on one hand, there's the optimism and hope of, you know, getting to be in this new place where a lot of great things can happen, as kind of hunky-dory as that sounds. And then there's the bittersweetness of having left something that you really love, a homeland that you leave not of your own accord. So,
one of the pressures on immigrants who come is that perhaps they were a physician in the country from which they came, or a responsible person, or right, business leader. And then coming to the new world, there's a whole different way of being perceived. They can't be what they used to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And that theme is something that I've always been very intrigued by in seeing. You know, for example, some of the men in my family, or, you know, my father, who is a teacher and professor in the old world, and that sense of attempting to communicate who you were, and yet, you know, my parents were in their 40s when they came here and had to learn a new language, you know, go back to school because their degrees were no longer relevant, and the challenges of perhaps not being seen for who you are, because even though you're smart in your native language, you can communicate. Like, I imagine if I were transplanted to Shanghai, I couldn't communicate like I can today. And it's that hitting up against the wall. And I experienced that having lived in Italy for a year after graduate school. And I'd go to a dinner party and kind of sort of get the joke, but I could never be the person who told the joke. And I'm not used to that. You know, I'm used to being me here. And
so what kind of jokes would you want to tell?
Don't put me on the spot.
I went to Vietnam a couple of years ago, and to Saigon and to Hanoi, and I was very struck by the population of Vietnam today. I think it's 75% of the population is under the age of 30, and which means that for those of us who think of the Vietnam War and the great wave of escapees and so on and so forth, it's really ancient history for people who live there now.
Yeah, I was also struck by that when I returned, and it's the people in Vietnam just completely embrace Americans. They absolutely love Americans, and they're so eager to be able to participate, on the global economy. And I do feel like it's an old story for them. And if anything, what I found is that the people who immigrated and arrived hold on the memories of the past. And that's what we all do. You know, you sort of reminisce about that first love, and that picture stays cemented. But and so it's kind of funny, because growing up, I mean, my parents are fairly traditional, and they're always like, oh, well, if we were in Vietnam, you would not get to spend the night at someone's house. Or, in Vietnam, that was always the preface. And when we went back to Vietnam, my cousins were actually like wild and wearing like platform shoes and tank tops, and they're way hipper and more modern than I was, and they had boyfriends and girlfriends, and it was always like, here, my parents would say, well, no, you can't date till you've graduated from college, because what's the point of dating? And no, you shouldn't date till after you have a job, because what's the point of having a relationship if you can't afford a house? Sorry. I mean, they're in the audience, so.
So did you have, was it an enjoyable experience translating these experiences and emotions and recollections into fiction?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I've been so overwhelmed and touched by the outpouring of support. I wasn't sure how my extended family would react, and it's been tremendous hearing from people in Australia or Germany or France, because everyone was dispersed like seeds throughout the world after they escaped. Everyone ends up perhaps in a refugee camp, but then you have to pick what countries you want, so people are everywhere. So on that note, that's great, and then just family and friends here from college and so forth, and it's been very rewarding, yeah.
When you would sit, and there would be clearly probably some kernel of an idea or a few kernels or seeds of experience that would come into a story, and then you would make up these characters, and some of the characters continue in different stories.
Right.
It suggests that these characters are living within you. I mean, you pal around with them in some way.
Yes, that is true. And some of these characters, for instance, there's a woman named Kim who has to raise two kids on her own. And she's in her mid-20s. She arrives on her own, has to learn a new language, while her husband is a POW who's still in Vietnam, stuck in the Central Highlands because he fought with the Americans, and so he's imprisoned. And they have this amazing love story, because I kept on revisiting her. She and Duke pop up in three stories in the story collection, and I just felt like they kept on, tugging at me and scratching me and whispering in my ear, and as a result of that, I've started a novel that spans Duke and Kim's relationship. So she's this sort of high society girl in Saigon, and he's, an officer in the war, and the novel spans them meeting sort of pre-war through to the war, and then, spans to America and her kind of ravaged by everything she's been through while writing letters back and forth, trying to figure out, do I stay with him? Do I believe that he's ever going to make it here? Should I start a new life?
So it's not just the men who have identity shifts, profound identity shifts. I mean, if you're a high society, what was a high society girl in Saigon?
I mean, this is my imagination.
Sure, of course.
But, you know, somebody who comes from a family that, you know, where everybody was educated in the West, you know, so being educated in Paris or America so that you can come back to Vietnam and have that Western education, you know, the doctors, you know, you're tied in with the prime minister, somewhat Francophiles, you know. I think that's my envisioning of it. And when I look at photos, it looks quite glamorous. And I was always intrigued by that as a child because all the portrayals I saw as a young person were always, you know, women who were, you know, dancing at the discotheques, you know, servicing these soldiers. And it was such a different picture when I would flip through my parents' albums and my mom would have these gorgeous silk dresses and my dad had these cool skinny suits, you know, that looked very mod. And I just was very curious. Like, people were actually living lives, going to cafes and the society world and, you know, watching movies like Elizabeth Taylor and Cat in a Hot Tin Roof and having dinner parties, all while this war was going on that really spanned from the time the French were there, you know, through to the American occupation.
It's a remarkable and resilient country, and that it now sits in the on the UN Security Council with three of the countries it's defeated, China, France, and the United States, is something that, you know, the Vietnamese were, you know, quite proud of in a very quiet way.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a man who cuts my hair who's from Vietnam, and he came over on a boat as well. And I asked him if he'd ever want to go back to Vietnam and cut hair there, be a hairstylist there, and he said, "No, man, you know, they only get 25 cents a haircut, plus you have to clean the earwax out of everyone's ears."
Oh, come on.
That's what he said to me.
Come on. Have you ever requested he do the earwax on you here?
I did. I said, would you, how much? He said, no, I'm not going to do that. No way. You know. But it's, but he likes to go back with his family and visit. And yet there is also, you know, the tear in him, I think, between the country that he grew up in and, you know, feels in his blood in some way, and also this new home that he really loves and adores.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that fiction is an interesting way to work out those dilemmas and the conflicts. How many people share your bedroom right now? I mean, that came out the wrong way. All right, at a time you had a whole family. There were three families in three different bedrooms.
Depends on the day. I'm kidding, no. I live with my boyfriend in Oakland.
Yeah. I didn't mean to pry. I mean, that wasn't, you know, going that way. But it was the idea that, you know, when you are put in these sort of constrained, almost claustrophobic circumstances, when you're on top of one another, it's very difficult to, you know, have the space or the privacy that you need to deal with that kind of emotional load.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I don't know how they did it, meaning my family in the first year we were here. So, I mean, the book is fictionalized, obviously, and characters are expanded or condensed, and nobody's really interested in mild temper people walking from room to room. But
you have to have a little action going on.
And so, yeah, so the action is in the stories.
I mean, there's just, for instance, I just want to read one little bit if I can pick up your book here. And by the way, it's interesting, you use a quotation of Robert Haas at the at the beginning, which is actually many people's favorite line, or one of them. It says, "Longing, we say, because desire is full of endless distances."
Yeah.
I mean, so this is as much about the longing for the old place. I mean, it's... The house is big and old. There are lots of hidden closets and corners and secrets inside, like how we're not allowed to bring up Uncle Duke because he's in jail in Vietnam, or how we have to step over my dad when we go to the bathroom at night, but come morning we have to pretend he was never sleeping in the hallway. or how we're not supposed to hear Uncle Lamb's fists on Aunt Tram's body. So when it's the 4th of July and all our parents leave so they can work overtime, and they close all the curtains because they say it'll keep the house cooler, I wonder if it's to keep us a secret too. I mean, it's a very, very moving and section that just sort of conveys the dilemma and the ambition and the aspiration all in a paragraph. I think it's, you know, quite telling of the rest of the book.
Thank you.
Yeah. The book is called Quiet as They Come by Angie Chow, C-H-A-U, and it's published by IG Publishing. Thank you very much for being here on West Coast Live.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Angie Chow. I'd like to welcome, not to...